is Carrie Barber. I have with me now a resident in Gaza who has been tweeting nonstop for several days, almost a play-by-play of what is actually happening on the ground for residents there. And I am so delighted and honored to welcome Jason Shawa, who is right now in Gaza. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning. Good morning, Carrie.
I've been so impressed with the messages that you're putting out and helping people around the world understand exactly what is going on in Gaza from a civilian perspective. Part of this has been taking us through the last 7 days of what is arguably a siege on Gaza, which is already in many respects an open air prison. So I'd like for you to explain a little bit of what's going on right now in Gaza.
Well, first of all, the siege thing, that's been going on for like 14 years now. I mean, Gaza has been locked up for at least 14 years. Israel controls every single thing that gets into Gaza. That includes medicines, food, chocolates, toilet paper, you name it. And in the past 7 days, I mean, compounded with all that stuff, this I don't know what to call it, I mean, massacre. They have gone insane. They are bombing all over the place, literally indiscriminately, ripping houses to bits, residential buildings, infrastructure, streets, schools. Even now I understood there are two UN schools that are supposed to be used as shelter for the people who got displaced because their homes were destroyed. The news is saying that Israel gave the UN warning that they're going to bomb these two schools a little bit to the north of where I live, a kilometer or two. So it's very dangerous. It's very difficult. No one is safe. Literally, no one is safe.
So tell me about this, because the reports that we're getting out of the Israeli government and other corporate-led media is that it's all targeting Hamas, that these are strategic strikes for Hamas.
That is such a big lie. That is bullshit, excuse my French. They're targeting residential homes, schools, infrastructure, roads, water pipelines, electricity networks, 100% civilian homes, 100% residential buildings. The argument that they're targeting Hamas facilities or Hamas individuals is simply a blatant lie. There's no truth to that. There's absolutely no truth. Sure, they've targeted a few Hamas officials and killed them, but that is just a fragment, a little fragment of what's going on. It's terrible. I mean, I own a flat in a building that was bombed last night, which we moved out a couple of years ago when we built our house. People were like 40 families live in that building. I was with them on the phone all night. I was worried to death for them. They're all my friends and neighbors. We were there for 10 years. That place saw the birth of my two little daughters, and we have so many fond memories there with those people. And luckily, they did not tear down the whole building, but they managed to target two flats there, and they intentionally hit which is a policy they're doing now. They precisionly target the concrete columns that support these buildings, and they render them useless, unfit for living. And eventually these buildings will collapse after this whole thing is over. And of course, media won't take note of that. And they'd have achieved this target of destroying these homes, destroying the economy, without having to have the image of them blowing up entire residential buildings in the media. But they do continue to strike at small homes, 1, 2, 3-story buildings. And in many cases now, without warning, which wasn't the case in previous assaults on Gaza. I even know a friend of mine. He owns a clothing shop. I buy stuff from him. He wasn't the only one. I mean, there were like, I don't know, 5 families in that building, and they were sleeping.
So you had mentioned that the absolute control that the Israeli government has over what comes in and goes out of
Gaza,
and then in context of past events where they have destroyed infrastructure and apartment buildings, how easy is it for the people in Gaza to rebuild the infrastructure?
Oh, that's a very difficult process, extremely difficult, lots of restrictions. Of course, it's done via international bodies, UN and such agencies is the, let's say, the mediator between Israel and the people who need to rebuild and reconstruct their homes and buildings and businesses and whatnot. It's a process that takes a lot of time. Israel imposes very difficult restrictions. I mean, like they want the UN to verify that the 2 tons of cement allocated for Jason have been received by Jason. And lots of other conditions that I can't think of right now that make it very difficult for people to rebuild. Eventually they do, but it takes years. I mean, there are lots of homes and residential buildings that have not yet been rebuilt since the last attack on Gaza in 2014. I find mind-boggling is that all these billions of dollars that are poured into reconstruction after such attacks are paid for by the same countries who buy and support Israel financially, diplomatically, politically. And I don't understand, why do they want to pay so much money and endure such costs? I just don't get it.
Just this morning, you had sent out a tweet about the issue with power and electricity. Now, it's summer in Gaza, as it is in most of the Northern Hemisphere. So we're not just talking about the effects of the heat and the conditions, but you're still ravaged by COVID. And now you have health facilities, hospitals, all of these other facilities who are compromised because of the power issue. Can you talk about that a little?
Yes, well, Gaza has one power plant that at its best and maximum efficiency in the good old days would supply something like, I think, 60% or so of the needs of power for Gaza. And the rest is supplied by Egypt and by Israeli power lines feeding into Gaza, of course, paid for by the Palestinians, contrary to what Israel keeps saying, that they give us electricity. That's such a lie. Anyway, so now this power plant, it's been bombed several times throughout the years, and each time it gets bombed, it takes so much money, so much coordination effort with Israelis to get in the needed parts to repair. And with each strike, I mean, the efficiency goes down. I mean, how much can you fix up, a bombed power plant? And so now the electric company issued a statement saying that they're going to run out of fuel this evening, which means the power plant is going to close down and we're going to only get the little electricity we get via Israel and Egypt, which is probably covers like 5% of the strips needs. And of course, in such situations, the most hard hit segment is the medical segment, hospitals, ICUs. I mean, they all have backup generators, but they're also experiencing extremely severe fuel supply. It's a major, major, major concern.
So let's talk a little bit about, it's not just the power issue, but the other point that I, as a journalist, I'm really struggling with this piece of it. Initially, the Israeli government said that Hamas had fired 300, then it was 500. Now we're seeing upwards of 3,000 missiles fired into Israel. Can you talk about, I know that you
well, I mean, this is the argument every single pro-Israel person or entity says or gives. I mean, this is not the fact. I mean, they never, never, ever address or dare to address the core issue, which started 7 or 8 decades ago when colonists from all over the world came and simply took our land. That is a fact that no intelligent person can deny. And since then, they've been subjugating us to every type of oppression you can think of, anything, violence, deprivation of services, backbreaking taxes, extreme severe on movement, on leaving, on traveling, whether for education or to simply receive cancer treatment, even to travel to the West Bank. I mean, there are many people, we personally, my wife and myself, who are in need of treatment in the West Bank for cancer, and they're not able to get there. They control every single aspect of the life of every single Palestinian in Gaza and the West Bank. And they do it in a very inhumane and very brutal way.
So Human Rights Watch and other international organizations have actually used the word apartheid to describe what is happening. Do you agree with that?
No, actually, I don't agree with that, although I've used that hashtag a few times. Of course, there is apartheid. I think that applies more to Palestinian citizens living within the boundaries of what is now called Israel. They're probably most hard hit with the apartheid system. What happens with us is something else. It's beyond apartheid. I mean, apartheid, they oppress other people. Us, they don't consider us people. They don't consider us human beings. We're totally expendable to them. They just treat us even worse than animals. It's really hard to explain. So no, it's not apartheid. It's plain and simple murder. It's occupation. And it's just a brutal military occupation.
So can you tell me a little bit about the people, your neighbors in Gaza? From Western reports, you would think that it's all Palestinians are Muslims and terrorists. So tell me a little bit about your family, your neighbors. What do you know of the people of Gaza?
Gaza is the Gaza Strip is 365 square kilometers. It's a very small space with over 2 million people cramped up. It's supposed to be one of the most crowded places on earth in terms of population, in relation to area of land. I love this place. I love these people. Gaza has Muslims. It has, sadly, a small Christian community now, probably just a little bit under 1,000. It used to be a thriving community. We never had any issues with them, and vice versa. It was an excellent, excellent kind of brotherhood. I don't know getting my words right, but the schools, gardens, parks, shops, just like any other place on earth. It's a place with people living, children going to kindergartens and schools, and people going to restaurants when they can. It's sad to see this happening to it. I mean, the destruction is really beyond comprehension. I mean, I've seen so many pictures. And as we all know, pictures don't do justice. I mean, it's horrible. It's horrible. It's going to take billions to fix this place and years to come to fix it, let alone the horrible psychological scars they're leaving on us and our children in particular, which is mine and my wife's main concern with our two little daughters. I mean, we're having a very difficult time trying to keep them calm and,
As a parent, that must be just heartbreaking and difficult.
It is. I mean, last night we had a massive raid, probably in a radius of 200 meters, 300 meters at the most, around our neighborhood. It was horrible. It was horrible. And we are very lucky that when we built the house, the first thing we asked the architect to do is put in a basement just for these circumstances. And last night, we decided to finally utilize it for the first time. And it's pretty safe if there's no direct hit on the place. But it was horrible. It was horrible. I can't even begin to describe. I mean, my daughter, Zainab, six and a half years old, she'd cover her ears. And... that she'd ask me to press on her hands, on her ears, so she...
I understand.
So she doesn't hear the bombing and stuff. It's difficult. I mean, the younger one is a little bit more manageable. I mean, she's four. She doesn't quite know what's going on. She just cries when her older sister cries or shouts. Yeah, but she is going to get her share eventually. I mean, we've gotten used to this happening every 2 to 4 years or so. It's horrible.
So global leaders right now are having a debate or pushing back. The Biden administration has reiterated the rhetoric that Israel has a right to defend itself, not necessarily speaking towards Palestinians. We've seen this from the Dutch government, the UK, France. They are all seem to be waiting. And one of the days that they had mentioned is they're waiting until Tuesday. So if you have the opportunity to speak to these legislators, these representatives on the global front, what would you say to them?
I honestly don't know. I mean, one shouldn't have to tell them anything if they're human beings, if they watch the news, if they see what's going on, if they know the history of our oppression. I honestly don't know what to tell them. I mean, I don't know. I don't think anything you tell them can change the way they think or their blind, unwavering support for Israeli terrorism. I just don't know. I honestly don't know. I'm sorry, I can't think of anything.
That's perfectly all right. So I very much appreciate you taking the time out of your day with everything that's going on.
Thank you.
Share your story with the rest of the world.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Carrie.
Yeah, our hearts are with you. And I think this is an issue that it's a human issue. It's not about borders.
It is. It's purely a human issue. I mean, again, I will say this again. I mean, the vast majority of casualties, human casualties, buildings, businesses, economic establishments, whatever you want to call it, there, without exaggeration, 99% civilian. They have nothing to do with Hamas or rockets. I mean, they bombed an ice cream factory this morning. Why would you do that? I mean, an ice cream factory, a mattress factory. They just enjoyed, I can't help but feel they have get some kind of sadistic pleasure. I mean, when this whole siege thing, blockade thing on Gaza started, okay, you want to control the substances going into Gaza that might enter into the making of bombs. Why would you ban toilet paper? I mean, they just do stuff like that. And then they'd lift the toilet paper off the what they call a dual use list, which is a list they put items on that they say can be used to manufacture rockets. So they'd like take off the toilet paper from this list and then add, you know, sanitary, I don't know the name in English, the women use the pads. So they'd go on the list instead of toilet paper and so on. I mean, for a long period of time, we had zero candy and chocolate entering Gaza, for example. It lasted for like a whole 6 months. Why would you do that? I mean, if that's not punishment, sadistic punishment, what would you call that? I mean, what am I going to do with a bar of chocolate? I mean, it's insane. The same applies for soft drinks, anything, electrical appliances, TVs, cell phones, anything. Anything we need for medicines, dialysis, medication, chemicals they use for dialysis, that's a constant issue. All of a sudden, they ban the entry of these chemicals and people start dying and suffering. It's just beyond me why and how they do that and how the international community and international world leaders just sit back and watch. I just don't get it. I honestly don't. Honestly, that's why when you said say something to them, I don't know what to tell them. I mean, it's there for you to see. It's insane, really.
Do you think that part of it is that the rest of the world hasn't seen it? Well, global leaders might be aware, the rest of us.
What we're sensing, I mean, this time there's huge popular solidarity from all over the world, including Germany and the US and France. But it's never the issue of the people. We never really lacked solidarity by peoples of the world. It's always the government. And for some reason, they see it fit to support Israel, blindly support them, arm them, finance them. Why? I don't know. And they know that all these finances and weapons they give them go towards killing us. They know that. And yet they continue to do that. I just don't get it. Is there some kind of conspiracy thing going? I have no idea. Honestly, don't. I fail to understand it. I fail to understand how they can sleep at night, people like Biden or whoever are really taking their time, I mean, trying to intervene. I mean, Joe Biden can get on the phone and literally in one phone make this thing stop. I mean, he calls President Abbas to ask him to get things under control. I mean, how lame is that? I mean, he knows every single person following news in Palestine and Gaza knows that he doesn't control this stuff. He has zero control. And yet he wastes the time and calls him instead of calling Netanyahu and having him stop this. It's just crazy.
So with the power issue and journalists like myself and others around the world who have been following you and a bunch of others who have been so diligent in telling the story and helping us follow along, our big concern now is without power, we can't hear the story and understand what's going on. We must
Well, the major concern, I mean, with regards to getting the news out is if Israel decides at some point to target cellular networks and internet lines and that kind of stuff. Power is of course, it's a major factor too, but many people here and there have small solar power devices that give some electricity or some generators here and there. But my main concern, which I was thinking of last night when they were bombing our neighborhood or around it, was what if they suddenly decide to target all phone and internet lines? They would cut us off completely from the world. And then they'll just do whatever they like. Well, they are doing that anyway, but they'll have a free reign to do even more and more with no coverage whatsoever. I mean, the only way would be to talk to the world would be to have a satellite phone, which is impossible in Gaza, of course, apart from a few press agencies or so, which they also have a hard time covering. It's very, very unsafe, very unsafe. So that's why also you don't see that much coverage. It's very safe. And they're targeting their infrastructure, their buildings, their offices, keeping them, the press, I mean, on the run too. It's they have a tough job also.
Absolutely. So I so appreciate you taking the time this morning. And
my pleasure. I
hope that your family and others in Gaza are safe. And I hope that this ends.
Amen to that.
I hope that this ends today. So thank you so much. And I will be following along with you as will the rest of the world.
Thank you very much for you and everybody watching. Their solidarity really means a lot to us.